Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. I am Tom Chandler, and I'm an associate research scientist at the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University, and I was also an instructional designer there for a number of years. And luckily, I have no financial disclosures, so I'll leave it at that. And the title of this presentation is Assessing the Use of Online Social Networks by Public Health Agencies During Large-Scale Disasters. And the co-collaborators on this are Dr. Benita Panigrahi and Dr. David Abramson. So, for starters, just reflecting back on what's changed and where we need to go in this area of social media, I thought it would be interesting just to reflect on 9/11 and the extent to which a lot of the technologies have changed between now and that time. So during that particular disaster or terrorist attack, there was an enormous need for information in real time, for parking for large vehicles, morgue space, registries of missing persons, and maps. It even took a few days for a map, a geographic information system file in Albany, to be driven down to Lower Manhattan so it could be used as part of the disaster response, because the file was simply too big to send over the network at that time. So just in terms of the bandwidth, there have been enormous strides. And then looking at Hurricane Katrina here in New Orleans, horrible disaster response, largest migration of people since the Civil War, and also around that time the rise of social networks and social media, people communicating online about disasters. But at the same time, new tools like Google Earth, it took that company 6 months to provide aerial photography of the damage of people's homes in the storm, because the program was not actually designed for that purpose. And we also saw situations like this near the Superdome, where you had thousands of people doing post-it notes to try and provide information on where loved ones were, and it was not until really 2010 that Google had completed the person finder and the ability to track that information online during large-scale disasters. So a lot of changes going on, and also it's been interesting to get a sense of how the phenomena of people observing situations and the human need to share that information with other people. This is a steam pipe explosion in Manhattan in 2007, and you can see everybody's got their little Nokia cell phones, and once they realize it was safe to film, they're taking photos of it to share with other people to say, oh my goodness, this is going on, and I was there. And then a new phenomenon after the earthquake in 2010 in Haiti, there was the Ushahidi platform, which was oftentimes used for first responders to communicate with each other during the disaster, but it's really been questionable up until this point the extent to which it was actually used as a mechanism to save lives or actually rescue people from the rubble. And that's really the main question that I wanted to put before us today, is the extent to which that's even possible with social media as compared to just being used as a communication tool for situational awareness. So the study that we're currently working on right now, it's a qualitative study. It involves an analysis of two counties in the New York area. It's a Westchester County and Nassau County, which are very close to New York City. If there's going to be an evacuation from Manhattan, people will either be going to these counties or through these counties to evacuate. And that's an important consideration for hospitals in the event of a large-scale disaster. So these two counties experienced a great deal of storm damage from Hurricane Sandy in 2012, extreme flooding, Nassau County is in the very, very high area, and Westchester is in the high area, and also wind damage that impacted more than 10,000 people. So the methodology for our main portion of the study was to do interviews with public health leaders in these two health departments in Nassau and Westchester County. So we've interviewed 37 people, to primarily key informants and subject matter experts. We've also conducted a roundtable discussion in the New York area with several of the public health commissioners from the region to get their perspective on the response to Hurricane Sandy. And we're also going to be doing focus groups with staff from the two public health agencies. And those will involve hospital coalitions, nursing home coalitions, and line staff. So where the social media aspect comes in is the bottom line is that we've noticed, and there's a great deal of attention in the media towards the role in which New York City's disaster response played during Hurricane Sandy, but not as much from the outlying counties. And just to put this in a little bit of perspective, the New York State is very much a home rule state with a very strong sense of local control and a not as much power from the State Department of Health. And we've also seen a lot of these issues play out quite recently with the situation with the Ebola quarantines. So we were able to access 3,000 social media postings aggregated by a company called Geofedia. Has anyone heard of the Geofedia? Okay. Some of the limitations of this, although 56% of Americans have a social networking profile of some sort, only about 2 to 5% of that population has the location device turned on for their mobile postings. So it's really a fairly limited number of users who are actually sharing their location. Sometimes they're doing it willingly, sometimes they're doing it unwillingly. But that decision is based on their relationship with their provider for that particular social media device. And for an instance, Twitter does not track the location by default for the geolocation, but Instagram does. So some examples of just other issues that tie into this. This region of New York City also has a number of economic inequalities. You can see that this is 25% or more in poverty. If you go toward the Nassau and Lower Westchester area, there are pockets of extreme poverty, some of which are contain more social vulnerabilities than in the five boroughs of New York City. But there's also pockets of extreme wealth, which make the analysis of this a little bit more tricky. And just to show you what this Geofedia program looks like, it's basically you can draw a geographic fence around an area, and you can see all of the postings from a particular location. So let's say you thought this presentation was really boring, and you were tweeting about it, like, oh, God, I can't wait to get out of here. And we had put a geographic fence around this area, we would be able to see those postings in real time on the screen. And
it was like tweeting out there.
And although it's kind of intrusive in terms of privacy considerations, this type of technology is very useful for gaining situational awareness during a disaster. And that's precisely what this software was used for during the Boston bombings in a few years ago. The Boston Police Department used it to try and use face recognition of different people who were posting from the scene of where the marathon was. And it also has a feature where you can do a retrospective geographic fence of previous disasters And so that's one of the things we're working on right now, which I'll talk about more. So the research questions are really, to what extent did the general public interact with the public health agencies via social media during Hurricane Sandy? And the bottom line finding is that in NASA and Westchester, requests were really only made via 911. There was not really an emphasis by the public health agencies to have any type of immediate public health contact via social media. And the other question, to what extent did the public health agencies interact via social media with the general public? There was also really an effort to provide some basic situational awareness and in some ways promotion of what the public health agencies were doing, but there wasn't really an effort to gain a sense of situational awareness of problems that the public was experiencing at a particular time. So New York City, the experience was fairly different, actually. There were requests for immediate assistance to the New York Fire Department. This is an example of a woman who was a dispatcher, and the actual phone 911 system had become overwhelmed, and she started looking at requests coming in via Twitter, and she was actually sending the Twitter postings to the fire department for immediate rescue along with 911 calls. So it was really one of the first instances in which social media was incorporated into a direct immediate response. And by the numbers in New York City, between October 26th and November 8th, they received 4 million unique visitors on 16 million page views. They had a YouTube channel with a million views. And the city sent more than 2,000 tweets, gained more than 175,000 social media followers during the storm. And that pales completely in comparison to the efforts made by the outlying public health agencies in their efforts to use social media. And one of the primary reasons for that was because the outlying agencies simply had no power or the capacity to have backup generators to focus on this specific issue with the mammoth amount of other problems going on. It was just not seen as a immediate priority in comparison to all the other public health needs. So what transpired in places like Nassau County was messages like this that were sent from the county executive on behalf of the commissioner, advising on things like do not drink the water, for brushing your teeth, drinking or bathing. And this was really a new effort by this county health department to provide information in the public rather than the traditional way of just distributing press releases to the media. Another interesting finding that is really more in the qualitative information was we had a roundtable discussion where there were several health commissioners talking about their response to Hurricane Sandy, and the commissioner from Nassau County was talking about his concern of discussions about looting, or really rumors about looting that proved to be false. And that really had a negative impact on the public health response because you had a lot of senior citizens living in places like along the coastline of the ocean who were afraid to open their door to public health responders because they thought they were going to be looted. And there was a lot of talk within the social media regarding these rumors and the really concerns that people had. And this is actually one example of a YouTube clip where this is a guy who says he's seeing possible looters on his block, and he's showing other people how to load a gun and prepare for this disastrous situation that is going to happen. But the actual instances of looting in Nassau County after the storm was extremely minimal. So this was in one way a situation where some staff within the public health agency became more interested in observing what was going on after this phenomenon had taken place. Another more positive situation that had taken place is really this theme of the young helping the elderly, which we were able to tease out in some of the interviews and qualitative information, is that there were a lot of groups of community groups who were sometimes in high school or college, very fluent in using social media, who became very troubled when they didn't see much of a presence from the Red Cross or the New York City Office of Emergency Management for 1 week and 2 weeks. And so they really took it upon themselves to take matters into their own hands. They had organized substantially online with logistical support through social media, and they were able to really make a significant part of the disaster response. And one example of that was going door to door and visiting a lot of elderly or mentally ill folks who were not willing to open their door to other people that they didn't know. And so that was really a new effective part of the response that most likely wouldn't have happened to that extent without the incorporation of social media. And we refer to this type of person or organization as a boundary spanner, really somebody that has a relationship with vulnerable people who need help but aren't able to post their own social messages themselves, and also has a relationship with first responder organizations to be able to participate as a member of the table in a response. And interestingly, many of the students who were involved in these types of community groups had enrolled in a program in New York City called the CERT program, which went over basic disaster themes like purifying water and working with utility companies and things like that. So really the bottom line is that many of the public health agencies surrounding New York City and the New York City Office of Emergency Management did not leverage social media to engage with the public to the same extent that a lot of community groups did. And since Hurricane Sandy, there is now a more of a growing interest from public health agencies and first responder groups to leverage social media for the public good. And some of those involve more usage of it for disease surveillance. And another interesting example that we have heard some officials talk about is using it to enforce legal compliance of public health issues, such as something like restaurant inspections. If there's a particular restaurant that's not complying, they might be more likely now to look up what someone is saying on Facebook than they would have been in the past. And in terms of what I was saying in the beginning about the just really designs to consider for immediate disaster response, there's one researcher named Patrick Meyer who he made an interesting quote that we need a match.com, kind of like the dating site, but for disasters. And I thought that was an interesting theme where so this is an example that he gave of a fairly simple design where the red is if you need help, the green is if you're willing to provide help, and then it takes you to a screen that's visual without providing too much text where it can take you to another level of detail of how you can either receive help or get help through a community-oriented way. And the other thing that I think is coming along that is worthy of discussion is the extent to which there should be public service announcements to encourage people during large-scale disasters to turn on the location of their social media so that there can be a better sense of evacuation protocols and where people are going and what they're saying. So with that, I will leave it up for questions. Thank you.
All right, gang. What questions do we have for Tom?
Yes. Ah, yes. That's a great question. The bulk of the ones that we examined were from Twitter and Instagram, because Instagram has the default is where it tracks your location, and a lot of the Twitter users are including their location as well. We were not able to get as much from Facebook due to the... it's a more complicated process in order to do that. And there have been a lot of attempts to get kind of a massive file dump of Facebook postings from many different organizations, but it's a really challenging thing to do. And it also ties into an interesting theme that the postings of a lot of these different platforms result in very different types of communication as well. So with Facebook, a lot of the postings regarding Hurricane Sandy were like, we're okay, like to let maybe someone's parents or their grandparents know that they were okay, whereas with Twitter, it was more of a different type of communication that was more immediate, oftentimes seeking help.
Other questions for Tom?
Yes.
So, with the Geopedia, did you consider other platforms that maybe you could put in a keyword search for your evaluation? That with Geopedia, if I understand it correctly, just draws a geographic map around, but maybe you plan to pull Sandy or pull.
Yes. You can include your own searches within your the date range and the geographic area that you choose, and you can include about 10 different query terms within there as well. But that's not to say that there aren't other systems that are doing a better job with the querying. And another thing that you can do in Geofedia and many of these other programs is to download the content as a CSV file and to analyze it in a database program.
Other questions? Yes.
Sure. That is a great question. We had already launched this study without focusing on the social media aspects, but it just started to come up by a lot of the people that we were interviewing. And so for the second year, we included this. And since all of these are public online postings, the IRB concerns, we did submit an IRB for it, but it was really very minimal because every single online posting that we've looked at, the person has agreed with their service provider to make that information public. So it's really in some ways similar to looking at Googling something and finding the information that way. Sure. Is that good? Okay. Well, for following users, we have done that with the boundary spanners because that is the group that of people who were really, they had a relationship with first responders, and they also had, they were aware of vulnerable communities that needed help. So oftentimes, we could follow their movements from different Twitter postings that they were doing. And what we would like to do actually is to kind of do a map over time of some of these different individuals to see in a geographic space where they went and what they did at specific times to help inform the disaster response. And the second question, again, was... There was a second part of that. Oh, who was using it? Our group, as the researchers, we're primarily using the Geofedia program. But I think there are some public health departments now that are becoming more interested in using that type of platform for disease surveillance and for monitoring possible public health violations.
Other questions? All right, I've got to ask one question. It's kind of obvious for me. How viable do you think this is going to become as a real tool for a disaster? Mm-hmm. Is there an expectation based on your research that our society can adopt social media as a platform and our government to use it as a platform to deal with a natural disaster?
Yeah. Thoughts? Well, I mean, one advantage of it is that the privacy limitations of analyzing millions of records is it's not really a difficult leap to obtain that information quickly and easily to start analyzing it. And each year you have millions and millions of new people who were once perhaps part of the digital divide who are now getting online and using social media. So it's, in a way, it's becoming a ubiquitous form of technology that will continually be with us and will have an increasing voice. But at the same time, there's going to have to be a lot more sophisticated, really, in some ways, artificial intelligence learning and the analysis to begin to address all the trivial information that's included in so many of the postings.
Thank you. Yes?
Yeah, we used Stata to do queries of that, and we were it wasn't an exact science. It almost became an analysis of posting to posting, to be honest. And it's a very difficult thing to do because some of the postings for, say, a YouTube clip don't really have a limits on the length, so it can be a fairly extensive amount of text that's included in it. And it really gets into interpretations of different types of language and what the person of that particular post is intending at that point in time.
Questions? All right. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.